Trib Live Radio presents Panther Lair, hosted by Pit Insider Chris Peek of PantherLair.com. A full hour of Pit football, basketball, and recruiting talk. Trib Total Media, see what's next. Now, here's your host, Chris Peek.
You know, one thing I've noticed in covering Pat Narduzzi since he was hired at Pitt in December is that I don't think he plays fantasy football. I think he probably is not playing fantasy football, partially because he probably doesn't have the time. You know, coaches are very busy. But I think he would be the guy who is just constantly on the waiver wire, like constantly, every week, dropping guys, adding guys. Somebody has a bad week, he's gone. Somebody has a good week, he picks him up. I mean, every week, he'd probably be out of moves. If you were in a league that had a limit on moves, he would probably be out of moves. He would expire his weekly allotment and probably his whole season allotment. And we've seen him do this, with the roster. You've seen the guys move in and out of the lineup. Starting lineups change almost every week. And guys, if they have a good week of practice, they're in. If they have a bad week of practice, they're out. But it goes beyond that. It's about this bigger philosophy that I've kind of picked up on. And I really thought about it this week. That Pat Narduzzi is of the mindset that if something's broken, you fix it. And you don't wait around to see if it's going to get better. You fix it. You go right to it. You don't waste any time. And the thing this week for Pat Narduzzi that he's put his focus on, the thing that's broken that he's trying to fix, is attendance. And we saw three things happen this week. First, he sent out an email to the fans basically saying, I've done what I said I was going to do here. I've made this team tough and play hard and physical, and we've won games. Now you need to do your part and come out and watch us play and get loud and stay for the whole game. Then he sent out an email, then on Wednesday, he had the students come down to practice. To watch practice, because he wants to engage the students more. He wants the students to stay for the whole game. And then they sent out an email to the students saying that if you stay till the end of the game, you get a drink and snack. He's being very aggressive. Now, we can talk. We're not going to waste our time here talking about the students, but look at what he's done. He identified a problem, and he went right after it. He was proactive. He was aggressive, and he's been that way since he got hired, whether it's the facilities upgrades or changing the uniforms or in recruiting. He's aggressive and proactive, and if he sees something's broken, he is going to fix it. He's been that way since he got hired in December, and then nothing has changed, and we saw it again this week. This is the Panther Lair Show here on Trib Live Radio. Chris Peek, publisher of PantherLair.com, and I don't know if you picked up on that too with Narduzzi. I mean, I'm sure you've seen this stuff that he's done this week about the attendance, about reaching out to the fans. The students got to watch, I don't know if it was the entire practice on Wednesday, but about an hour and a half of practice, which is about an hour more than the media got to watch it all in spring camp or training camp or during the season. So the students are already ahead of the game there. And then they're giving out Pepsi and Fritos to students who stay till the end of the game. They're emailing the fans. And it was a letter from Pat Narduzzi sent on email to everybody on Pitt's mailing list that basically said, look, we're 3-1. We've done what we told you we were going to do. I've held up my end of the deal. Now you need to come out and support us. He sees a problem and he's attacking it. And he's being proactive about it. And attendance is definitely the one that's got him all twisted up right now. Understandably so. I mean, it was not a good scene in the Youngstown State game. I think they announced 49,000, but I don't think there were 49,000 people there. And the students definitely left in droves at the start of the fourth quarter. And there's endless debate about what to do about that. I don't know what the right answer is. I guess win a lot of football games. But even then, they're 3-1 right now. If they go out and they're beating Virginia at the end of the third quarter, I still think the students will probably leave, or a lot of them. And, I don't want to turn this into a student bashing thing, but I mean, come on, man. If we're told that college football is all about passion and pageantry and all that, I mean, not the pageantry part, but the passion, I mean, students are supposed to be the heart of that. We always joke about people who say we when they're talking about their favorite sports teams. Like, I can't believe we lost to the Cubs last night. Well, you didn't lose anything. You were sitting in a bar, in Dormont. I mean, there's no we. You're not part of it. But college is unique in that way because you kind of are part of it. It's an organization you actually do belong to. And students, you're in it right now. Alums belong to it because they went to the school. But if you're a student at a school, you're in it right now. That is you. We. You can say we because you actually are a part of it. So you probably should stick around. Now, I know the old people, all the non-student fans don't exactly represent themselves well, or don't acquit themselves nicely when it comes to their attendance. And you have to deal with that too. But students, I think students should be the rock. Students should be the heart and soul of it all. You know, that corner back there where the students are should be the loudest and the most full section every week. And do I have a higher expectation for the students than I do for the old heads? Yes, I do. I have a higher expectation for the students. You're younger. You're there. You're part of it. You should have the energy. You should supply the energy. And I think, and to a large extent, they do. I think Pitt's student section does show up, and they are loud, and they've generally got that section more or less filled. But they do also leave after the third quarter, and that's not good. That needs to get corrected. All right, enough about that. Let's move on. We've got a lot to get to this week. Pitt 3-1. 1-0 in the ACC, looking to go 2-0 in the ACC for the first time ever, looking to go 4-1 on a season for the first time since 2009. How about that stat? The last 17 years, going back to 1998, or 1997, I guess it is, maybe the last 18 years then, Pitt has gone 4-1 exactly 5 times. They've been 3-1 a bunch of times and failed to get to 4-1. They've been 3-1 each of the last 3 years. Well, counting this year, 13, 14, and 15, they went 3-1. Last year, of course, they started 3-0, actually, and then lost 3 in a row before they won another game. 2 years ago, they started 3-1. They lost the Florida State opener and then won 3 games in a row and then lost, I think it was Virginia Tech, actually. This year, 3-1. Got a chance to go 4-1 for the first time in 6 seasons, and it should be doable. I mean, this is a game that you should win, playing against Virginia on Saturday at Heinz Field, homecoming game. First home game since the season opener, which is pretty ridiculous because that was a long time ago. But we'll talk a lot about Virginia. We got our friend Brad Franklin from CavsCorner.com, the Rivals.com site that covers Virginia. We're going to bring Brad in later in the show to tell us what's going on with this Virginia team. They're 1-3, and they've really, you know, I mean, they've played one of the toughest schedules in the country, and they've lost all the good teams they've played. Notre Dame, UCLA, and Boise State. So you look at that and you say, well, okay, are you a bad? You're not good because you're 1-3. You have that record. That means you're not good. But you played really good teams. So where do you fall on the spectrum? Are you actually better than your record would indicate, but you've just played some tough competition? Or are you really that bad? And I think there's some mixed answers. I think each game kind of had its own story. So we'll talk to Brad Franklin about that. He'll tell us what to expect out of Virginia. I'll tell you that I expect a win. I'll tell you that I expect Pitt to come out and win this game against Virginia. I mean, the last 2 years, when you look at these games, 2 years ago, you remember at Heinz Field, it was a 14-3 game, close, low scoring, obviously by the total, the 14-3. And then last year, they went down to Charlottesville, and it was a 24-19 game that included a pick six at the end of the first half. And you don't cherry pick plays, but you take that pick six out, and it's a 19-17 Pitt win. The season looks a little bit different. You can't cherry pick plays. Obviously, that pick six happened. You know, I mean, people could say the same thing about, James Conner had the touchdown that was overturned or was ruled not a touchdown. Similarly, J.P. Holtz had a touchdown that probably, if it had been called not a touchdown on the field, it probably would not have been overturned if they went to review that one. So the game happened. The game unfolded the way it did. It's just, That was in that string of losses with that game, Virginia Tech and Iowa, where Pitt's offense just couldn't get out of its own way, where the defense played well enough, but the offense just couldn't get out of the way. And really, in my opinion, cost them those 3 games. The defense didn't do anything to win, but they did play well enough to win, if that makes any sense. I don't think they really got any turnovers or anything significant like that with Virginia, Iowa, and Akron, but we've talked a lot about those games. So this is one Pitt should win. They should get to 4-1 for the first time in 6 years. We know the offense is going to be a big part of it. The offense has to find a way to get some consistency and some effectiveness. I think that's been on everyone's mind. But you know what? The defense is also a pretty big part of this too. And I think if you're a Pitt fan, you've probably enjoyed spending this week thinking about Pitt's defensive performance against Virginia Tech. So we're going to talk a lot about that today. We're going to talk about what the offense needs to do. We're going to talk about the defense and what has really made the difference, in my opinion. And also an interesting question I put out on Twitter this morning that I think can merit some interesting discussion. And we'll spend a little time talking about Tyler Boyd, because there have been some mixed reviews, some mixed opinions about his performance in that Virginia Tech game. And I'll tell you why I think most of those opinions and reviews are misguided at best and just flat-out dumb in some cases. So lots to get to today. Defense talk, offense talk, Virginia talk as we move forward here with the Panther Lair Show. It's Trib Live Radio.
Big Shot Bob's House of Wings, with over 200 flavors, located in Avalon at 344 Union Avenue, home of the soldier. See our full mouth-watering menu at BigShotBobs.com or call Big Shot Bob's at 412-761-SHOT. That's 412-761-7468. Card Room and Gift Shop, with fine collectibles, Boyd Bears, Hummels, Steins, Barbies, and more unique items, located at 306 Depot Street in Youngwood, Pennsylvania. Call the Card Room and Gift Shop at 724-925-3728. Good luck to the Hempfield Spartans from the Card Room and Gift Shop. Now back to Chris Peek on the Panther Lair Show on Trib Live Radio.
Welcome back, Panther Lair Show. Chris Peek, publisher, PantherLair.com. You know the website, Panther-Lair.com, the internet's most comprehensive source of Pitt sports news, football, basketball, and recruiting. And there's lots of all three of those things on the website this week, football, basketball, and recruiting. Check out on Friday. We'll roll out our list of recruits who are expected to be at Pitt's game against Virginia on Saturday. We've already got 20 names that we've confirmed, and more will be rolling in. So be sure to look for that on Friday as you get ready for the game. And then, of course, after the game, we'll have a full list of everybody we saw down on the sidelines. And Pitt should have a pretty good crowd of recruits there. I think they should have a pretty good attendance crowd. You know, 2 years ago, I did a bad job of predicting attendance because Pitt went down to Duke 2 years ago, and you remember that game, 58-55 win at Duke. The offense looked incredible. Tom Savage threw for like 600 yards or something like that. And then Pitt was coming home to host Virginia, actually, for homecoming. And I remember thinking, coming out of the game, and I said at the time, I think the crowd's going to be good for this one. It's going to be a beautiful day. It's homecoming. They're, I think, 2-1 at that point. Yeah, 2-1. I think they're going to have a good crowd. They're coming off this big offensive performance at Duke. Everybody loves offensive fireworks. They just scored 58 points. You know, Savage looks amazing. Boyd looks amazing. Street had a big game. James Conner had a big game that day at Duke. Like, I think people are going to be into this. They're really going to be excited for this game. And the attendance was just bad. It was miserable. Nobody showed up. I couldn't believe it. I remember standing on the sideline. I was talking to some people, some different Pitt people, and I'm like, man, where are your fans? You just dropped 60 points in a game. It's a beautiful day, and nobody's here. So I'm not very good at predicting attendance when it comes to games against Virginia following a road ACC contest. So I won't do it for this weekend. But, I mean, if you're a Pitt fan, why wouldn't you be at the game? I mean, really, it's going to be a nice day. The weather's going to be nice. The team looks good. I think there's – but anyway – That's not for me to tell you how to spend your Saturday afternoon or your money, but I think it should be a good crowd, or I think it will be a good crowd. We'll see what ends up, but there definitely will be a lot of recruits there. So keep an eye on the site, panther-lair.com, as we review all that, everybody who showed up at the game. And we'll talk about this defense. Pitt's defense, of course, coming off a pretty impressive performance at Virginia Tech, 100 yards of total offense, 9 yards on the ground, net yards. The fourth quarter in particular, and I'm going to come back to this in a little bit. You know, the fourth quarter, Pitt gave up a field goal at the start of the fourth quarter, a couple minutes into the fourth quarter. After that, interception, incomplete pass, 1 yard rush, 10 yard sack, punt, 8 yard sack, 7 yard sack, incomplete pass, interception. 12 total plays in the fourth quarter, Virginia Tech's offense ran, minus 18 yards gained. 2 sacks, 3 interceptions. They let Virginia Tech get within one score. It was 17-13. The offense, Pitt's offense, couldn't do anything. They drove to the Virginia Tech 36 and punted, and they drove to the Virginia Tech 24, or didn't drive to the Virginia Tech 24. They got the ball after an interception at the Virginia Tech 24 and had a field goal blocked. Multiple opportunities to put the game away, and Pitt's offense couldn't do it. Time and again, Pitt's defense stepped up. Pitt's drive stalls at the 36, and they punt. Virginia Tech throws an interception. Terrace Webb makes an interception, I should say, on the very next play. Pitt has the ball at the 24. They have a field goal blocked. And the next, you know, Virginia Tech takes over. Incomplete pass, 1 yard rush, 10 yard sack, and a punt. And this is the way it went. Again, Pitt goes three and out. Virginia Tech comes out, sacked twice, incomplete pass, and an interception. It was a dominant performance. And I'm like everyone else. This defense looks a whole lot better than it did last year. But you know what's interesting about that? And this is somebody on Twitter kind of scolded me for putting these stats out there. After four games last year, when Pitt was also 3-1, their defense had pretty good numbers, actually. So right now, Pitt is fourth in the nation in total defense. Do you know where Pitt was ranked in the nation in total defense after four games last season? Fourth. Right now, Pitt is 26th in the nation in pass defense. Do you know where Pitt's defense was ranked in pass defense in the nation last year after four games? 11th. Right now, Pitt's rush defense is 4th, and last year's team was 15th, so you got that advantage. And also, Pitt's scoring defense this year is 10th, and last year's team was 20th after four games in scoring defense. So there's some room for improvement, but the total defense is the same. Last year's team had better pass defense numbers through four games, and they were both in the top 20 in rush defense and scoring defense. Thought that was kind of interesting, and someone said, why are you saying this? Because that defense obviously went downhill pretty fast through the second half of the season. You know, people kind of scolded me for bringing these stats up because it sounds like I'm throwing a wet blanket on. I'm not, because I'm just as optimistic about this defense, as you are. And I'll tell you why. It's because some other stats. After four games last season, Pitt was ranked 54th in team sacks. After four games this season, Pitt is ranked 2nd in the nation in team sacks. After four games last season, Pitt's defense was ranked 91st in team tackles for loss. After four games this season, Pitt is ranked 14th. And that's the difference. That's the difference between last year's defense and this year's defense. Last year's defense had some success early in the season holding bad offenses in check. This year's defense is not just holding bad offenses in check. They're making plays. And that's a big difference. Last year's team had pretty much the same number of turnovers through the first four games. So that's not really what I mean, but sacks and tackles for loss, plays behind the line of scrimmage. Last year's team did very, very little of it. This year's team is doing a whole bunch of it. And it's pretty impressive to see. And that's what the biggest difference has been, if you ask me. And I think other people would probably agree. Making plays behind the line of scrimmage, sacks and tackles for loss. Pitt's linebackers last year had 6 sacks combined as a unit, and that's including Nicholas Grigsby, who was kind of playing a linebacker, kind of playing sort of a rush outside linebacker in their nickel package. He wasn't necessarily a traditional 4-3 outside linebacker. But even if we include him in the linebackers, they ended up with 6 sacks as a group. This year, the linebackers, just through 4 games, already have 6.5 sacks. And yeah, that wasn't a 4-game stat from last season. The whole season, the linebackers recorded a total of 6 sacks. This season, 6.5 already. They're more active, they're making plays. And it's largely the same personnel. Now, it's not exactly the same personnel. And this is something we've kind of gone back and forth about. People have said, you know, Pat Narduzzi's doing all this with this defense with the same personnel that really struggled last year. Well, for one thing, they added Juan Price. And adding Juan Price was a huge addition to this defense. I mean, he's made a big impact on this defense. He had 2 sacks on Saturday, really played the best game of his career, and he's playing as well as he has ever played in his career. Now, it helps that he's healthy. Injuries kept him out of the last 2 seasons. But he's playing as well as he has ever played at Pitt, and he's making a big impact. Rory Blair is playing really well. Daryl Render and Tyreek Jarrett are playing really well. Juan Price has probably been the revelation. But again, it's largely the same personnel other than Price and other than Jordan Whitehead, who's come in on the back end of the defense and emerged as the team's leading tackler, which is pretty impressive to see out of a freshman. Although Virginia had a freshman last year who I think was the team's leading tackler, so it's not totally unheard of. But it is largely the same personnel. And it's hard to draw any conclusions other than the scheme is just better and they're being coached better. And while I was accused of being a Matt House apologist at times last year, maybe even frequently last year, And maybe even sometimes it was slightly true because they just got tired of people saying, hearing people say the same thing over and over again about how it was all Matt House's fault. I think I was always careful to make my points sort of precisely that the personnel was not great, particularly up front. And the numbers back that up. I mean, you look down the line of Pitt's defensive linemen. You know, Daryl Render had 2 sacks. Shakir Soto had none. David Durham had 3 sacks. Kanan Mosley-Smith had none. Rory Blair led the team with 5 sacks. Justin Moody had 1 sack. Luke McLean had 0.5 sacks. Tyreek Jarrett had none. Devin Cook had 0.5 sack. That was it. That was really all you got out of your defensive line. You got very little pressure. You got very few sacks. So I think that was a personnel issue. But I was always careful never to really say that I thought House's scheme was great, because I had my own doubts about it. I had my own questions about it from people I had talked to who were way smarter about these things than me. I had my own questions about how effective the scheme could realistically be and how well it was being coached. In light of what this defense has done so far through 4 games this season, I think those questions resonate even more about how effective that scheme really could have been and how well it was really being coached. Now, we don't really need to spend all of our time talking about last year's team, right? We don't need to spend all of our time ragging on the coaches. But when you have this stark a contrast, and I know I went through some of those stats that are pretty close, same national ranking in total defense, and I think actually last year's team, even though it was also ranked 4th in total defense after 4 games, I think they were giving up fewer yards per game. So actually, by one measure, playing better. But when you have this stark contrast in plays behind the line of scrimmage, the tackles for loss and the team sacks, I think you have to look for what really changed. And with basically only one personnel change of adding Juan Price, I think you have to come back then to the coaching and the scheme. And Pat Narduzzi came in with the goal of improving the defense. And as I've said a few times, I mean, he's done it. He's improved the defense. He's made it better by virtue of his presence, I guess, by virtue of his influence, I guess you could say. Whatever it is, he and defensive coordinator Josh Conklin, linebackers coach Rob Harley, Tom Sims with the defensive line certainly deserves some credit. Ronaldo Hill, the safeties corners coach, I guess he coaches the corners specifically, but he works with the whole secondary. They've done their job so far. They've done their job through 4 games. I thought this question was interesting. I threw this out on Twitter this morning, and I thought it was interesting, and it got a lot of responses. It's a pretty basic question. But I think it's one that you hear it and you're like, well, that's a simple question. And then you think about it for a second and you're like, wait, huh. Who's Pitt's defensive MVP through 4 games? Because you look down this list. I mean, I look at the stats and I look at how they performed and I think about the names that come to mind right away. I don't think there's any one obvious answer with this for defensive MVP. I mean, Whitehead is the leading tackler. 29 tackles. Mac Lamos is right behind him. Nicholas Grigsby's obviously played well. Avante Maddox and Terrace Webb, Caprera. I mean, you know, sacks, you've got, who is it? Juan Price has 3, so he leads the team. Grigsby's got 2.5. You see a lot of stats. A lot of guys have put up different stats. And when I put this question out on Twitter, this kind of tells you, this tells you something about the defense. When I asked who's the defensive MVP, and quite literally, I got a lot of responses. 10 different names came up. 10 of the 11 starters were suggested by at least one person or as defensive MVP. Daryl Render, Avante Maddox, Nicholas Grigsby, Juan Price, Whitehead, Jarrett Blair, Bam Bradley, Terrace Webb, even Galambos got a vote or two. The only starter who wasn't named was Lafayette Pitts because Pitt fans hate him. I mean, because he doesn't turn his head around when he's in coverage. But what does that tell you about their defense? That when I ask Pitt fans, a broad spectrum of Pitt fans, who's the defensive MVP? And I got 10 different answers. Plus, you know, people said Narduzzi. People said Josh Conklin. People said Barry Alvarez for hiring Paul Christ, which in turn removed Matt House. All these, you know, funny jokes, funny guys, funny answers. But with the actual players, 10 different players were nominated as the defensive MVP. And if it's to tell you the truth, I don't know what the right answer is. You want to tell me it's Avante Maddox? I'm not going to deny. You know what it might come into? It might come down to that age-old kind of tired debate about what MVP actually means. Is it the guy who's playing the best, or is it the guy who truly, you know, emphasis on valuable, who is the most valuable to the team? If it's the guy who's just playing the best, and you want to tell me it's Avante Maddox, I'm not going to argue with you too much. You want to tell me it's Nicholas Grigsby, I'm not going to argue there either. He might be my vote for the guy who's playing the best. For the guy who is most valuable, who is is sort of central to what this team does, I might go with Tyreek Jarrett. He has played really well for 4 games now. And he might not always have the stats that the defensive ends or the linebackers put up, but he's impacting it almost every play. He is just really, and we heard so much about him in the spring. He was the most improved defensive player of the spring, and it's carried over. He's been playing this season like he did in spring and training camp, and it's been really impressive to watch. He might be my most valuable player, but if you want to tell me it's Jordan Whitehead, I'm not going to disagree with you. I do think there was a bit of a drop-off when he came out of the game for a series or two at Virginia Tech. And he is the team's leading tackler as a freshman. So I don't think there's an easy answer to it. But the good thing about that, if you're Pitt, is there's not an easy answer because a lot of guys are playing at a high level. I made this point about how in the Virginia Tech game, Pitt recorded a total of 58 tackles. 36 of them were recorded as tackle assists. Guys are swarming to the ball. You have all these guys who recorded tackles. You know, Galambos finished with 10 tackles. Grigsby had 9. But each of those guys, Galambos only had 3 solo tackles. Grigsby only had 2 solo tackles. They each had 7 tackle assists, meaning there were multiple guys rushing to the ball, swarming to the ball, and making group tackles, gang tackles, which is exactly what this coaching staff wants to have happen. Run to the football, see ball, get ball. And that's what they're doing. And the fact that I can ask you who's the defensive MVP and get that many different responses, that just further illustrates the point that these guys, that everybody, all these guys are playing at a high level and they're all making impact plays. Pitt's defense is in a good place right now. It's not going to be as, I shouldn't say easy, but it's not going to be like it was against Virginia Tech every week. We know that. We know they're going to have tough games. They're going to give up yards and they're going to give up points, but they're in a good place right now. Pitt's offense, not in quite so good a place. Panthers, ranking kind of low in a lot of ways on their offense nationally. 17 points, all they could put up at Virginia Tech. 276 yards of total offense. Just not a good day for the offense at all. And one guy who's been a lightning rod is Tyler Boyd. 5 catches, 48 yards. A pretty big drop on a drive in the fourth quarter after the Terrace Webb interception, I think it was. A play with it. He could have caught the pass if he had caught the pass. He definitely would have had a first down and put Pitt pretty close, I think inside the 10, and possibly could have scored a touchdown on the play. And he dropped it. And Pitt ended up trying to kick a field goal, and the field goal got blocked. And then, of course, Boyd also muffed a punt. And Pitt recovered it, so it wasn't a turnover. But those two plays, I think, got pointed out, or have been pointed out multiple times as being evidence of Boyd having a bad game. And by his standards, it wasn't quite up to snuff. I mean, he had 21 catches in the previous 2 games. So, yeah, he sets a bar pretty high for himself. But I think if you want to really get down on Boyd, I think you're misguided. At best, misguided. Because that 5 catches for 48 yards, 4 of those 5 catches were third down conversions. He converted 4 third downs. Pitt as a team converted 6 third downs in the entire game. Boyd converted 4 of them. And he wasn't just, it wasn't easy. Talking to some people who watched the game film or broke it down, and you know, smart people, football people, and they say the things Boyd was doing to get open, you might not notice them because it's not a jumping acrobatic catch, but he's doing impressive stuff. He's running really good routes. He's selling his routes, and he's getting defenders to bite. Virginia Tech was doubling Boyd all day. Always had 2 guys on him, and he was still getting open enough to catch 4 third down conversions. 7, 8, 9 yards. Huge plays for Pitt. They only converted 6, and he converted 4 of them. And if you're Tyler Boyd, if you ever notice, Boyd makes catches in traffic. We know that. And he's very good at it. But he's open a lot. You ever notice when he catches a pass, you say, wait, why isn't anybody around him? How do they not cover Boyd? Well, they are covering Boyd. But he's running his routes so well and selling his routes so well and making such good cuts that he's able to get open. And it's almost, and I mean, I hear words like disgusting and ridiculous used to describe Boyd's route running. Tyler Boyd is the best player on this team. The best, hands down. And he would be the best even if James Conner was still here. No offense to the ACC Player of the Year. Tyler Boyd is the best player on this team. And he only had 5 catches. He only had 48 yards. I know he muffed a punt. And I think on that punt, you know, if you watched, as soon as the ball was kicked, I looked back at Boyd, and I'm watching Boyd as he's lining up to field it. And he just, he never had his, I don't want to say he never had his footing under him. I mean, it wasn't about the field, but he never looked comfortable setting up to catch that punt. He didn't know where the rush was coming from, where the coverage team was. He was trying to look around at that. He took his eyes off the ball. It was one he probably should have waved off and run away from, really, when he realized that he just wasn't going to have a chance to field it cleanly, and he ended up fumbling it. I don't think he had a bad game. I really don't. I don't think with the, you know, with the success he had in limited opportunities, I think it's hard to say he had a bad game, because who knows what Pitt does if they don't have Tyler Boyd in that game, or what Pitt does if Tyler Boyd doesn't convert 4 third downs. Boyd's the best player on the team. And I think we fall into this habit sometimes. If a wide receiver, if we see him throw his arms up in disgust about something or act frustrated, then he's a prima donna. Or someone used the phrase on the message board, petulant child. Come on, man. He's a competitor. All right? He's a hard worker. He's a really good player. And does he get frustrated when he's not getting the ball? Sure, because he knows he's the best player on the team. I would be frustrated if I wasn't getting the ball if I was him. I got to think other players on the team are frustrated when the ball doesn't get to Tyler Boyd enough. But we fall into this habit that, you know, the wide receiver is the diva. He's the child. He's spoiled. Well, I think Pitt fans are probably the ones who are spoiled by having him on the team, watching him week in, week out. He's going to have more 10 reception games. Trust me. It'll happen. Maybe it'll happen this week. But he's going to continue to be the best player on the team, the biggest weapon on this team, and the reason they'll win a bunch more games. All right. Take a quick break. When we come back, Brad Franklin, our guy from CavsCorner.com, is going to join us to break down Virginia, tell us what to expect on Saturday when Virginia comes to Heinz Field. That's coming up next on the Panther Lawyer Show, Triple Live Radio.
Babcock Beer, located at 2199 Babcock Boulevard in Pittsburgh. The largest selection of craft beer in the area. All of your party and tailgating needs. They have an extensive inventory of seasonal and limited availability beers. It's conveniently located at the intersection of Babcock Boulevard and Thompson Run Road. Easy access, friendly service, and plenty of parking. Serving the North Hills for over 30 years. Check online for our beer specials. BabcockBeer.com. That's BabcockBeer.com.
You don't need to face criminal charges alone. Call me, Frank Walker, 412-532-6805.
Invisible Fence Brand has helped over 2 million pets enjoy more freedom in the yard so owners can relax, knowing their pets won't run away or get into trouble. Guaranteed. Our Boundary Plus yard systems give pets up to 30% more yard space, and even have a patented safety feature that leaves no room for escape. We provide expert installation plus 4-step professional pet training. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
Mr. Rooter Plumbing, with 24/7 emergency service and weekend service at no extra charge. Why call Mr. Rooter first? Free estimates. You know the price before we start. Fixed right the first time. Clean, professional technicians, and all work guaranteed. Residential services include complete plumbing, repairs, clogged drains and sewer cleaning, faucets and disposals, toilets and water heaters. Drain cleaning services include trench, sewer and water line replacement, pipelining and video inspection. Mr. Rooter Plumbing, 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Service when you want it. Red carpet treatment, make the call. 724-553-3355 or 412-557-3355. 567-3355. 1222. Online at Rooter2.com. That's Rooter, the number 2.com.
Now back to Chris Peek on the Panther Lair Show on Trib Live Radio.
Welcome back to the Panther Lair Show. Chris Peek, Trib Live Radio. Getting ready for Pitt, Virginia on Saturday at Heinz Field. And we're joined now by our good friend Brad Franklin from CavsCorner.com. It's the Rivals.com site that covers Virginia. Brad, it's always good to join us. Good to hear from you, Brad. I got to ask you right off. I mean, what's the vibe in Charlottesville right now? I can't imagine everybody's very excited about the Cavaliers being 1-3, but what's kind of the atmosphere of the place down there?
You know, Chris, I think that if they were 1-3 and the Boise State game hadn't, you know, been a debacle, they probably would be okay. I mean, I think everybody understood that the non-conference schedule this season was just a beast, and it was going to be tough for them to go into ACC play at 2-2. That having been said, I don't think it's necessarily the 1-3 that bothers fans or even, you know, those of us who cover the team. It's the manner in which that last game was lost. And I think we all have a recency bias to some extent. But, you know, you watch Virginia just kind of – they couldn't do anything right in that game. You know, it wasn't where a situation where, you know what, the defense is playing well, but the offense just stunk or vice versa. It was that every piece of the operation just failed. You know, special teams, offense, defense, all of it. And so I think the bye week probably came at a good time for them. The kids seem, you know, optimistic. I mean, they seem like they've really stuck together. The fact that they had the bye week at the same time that they had fall break at UVA gave the guys, I think, a chance to kind of stick around. There was a players-only practice that they held amongst themselves, which is an interesting piece of this whole thing, because what has happened to Virginia in the past has been when adversity strikes, they've kind of fractured a little bit. This group doesn't seem to be given into that. They seem to one of the biggest messages in that locker room after that Boise State game was, look, we're not going to point any fingers. Everybody screwed up today. We got to be better. So I think overall, I think fans are just, you know, fans are kind of used to just getting beaten down by this program, and they want change, and they just want to get to the end of the year to get it. But I think the players themselves and the coaching staff, they have a lot of belief that what they put on the field that Friday night against Boise State wasn't Virginia football. They think they're closer to the team that played Notre Dame tight, and I think that's what they want to see this weekend.
Well, I mean, obviously the schedule is such a big part of it. UCLA, Notre Dame, Boise State. You kind of touched on two of the three games there. They're all tough games. So, I mean, you come out of those three with three losses. Do you have an idea of who this team is? Do you have an idea of how good this team is, or is it just tough to get a handle on because not that they did what you expected them to do, that they lost, but it, inconsistent performances against three really tough teams. Do you have a sense of who they are or how good they are?
Well, I think that's one of the biggest problems right now. I think Virginia offensively wants to be a power running team. They're just not. They have a personnel that's more of a, I want to say, a kind of a multi-dimensional offense. They've got running backs who are very versatile. They've got wide receivers who are versatile. So they can do a lot of different things. If they had more of like a, and maybe not even a true spread, but something that was kind of built around misdirection and kind of, you know, lining guys up and maybe stretching you out wide, they'd be better off. They've got an offensive line that is pretty decent in pass pro, but they're not very good, you know, in terms of creating on the ground. And so what ended up happening against UCLA, for example, is Virginia came out, tried to run the ball, kept running into a brick wall and didn't know what to do. Against Notre Dame, they kind of had a contingency plan. They still tried to kind of set up the run. When that didn't work, you know, they let Matt Johns kind of live a little bit and kind of be himself. And I think that's the other thing, too, is that he's not a game manager. He's a playmaker. He's a guy who is overflowing with moxie and confidence. He wants to push the ball downfield. He's got some good weapons in the passing game. They got T.J. Thorpe back, the transfer from North Carolina, who I promise you was dynamic in the spring and fall camp before he broke his clavicle. They got him back against Boise State. He had probably the best play of the day, a 75-yard touchdown where he kind of tightrope the sideline. But in terms of who Virginia really is, I think the problem that they've had, at least up to this point, we'll see what they do coming out of the bye week, has been that they're trying to put a round peg in a square hole, and they're not being really true to what their personnel is. I think if they could kind of get to being that, what they kind of did more of against Notre Dame, they'd actually have a lot more success. And then defensively, they want to be an aggressive, you know, team that creates a lot of chaos in the backfield, but this is one of two teams in the nation right now that has not produced a turnover. And a John Tenuta aggressive style defense without turnovers is basically just handing the other team opportunities to make easy throws. When you're not getting pressure on the quarterback, when you're not creating takeaways, basically all you're doing is you're putting your cornerbacks in man coverage and you're leaving the middle of the field wide open. And that's kind of what Virginia's done for most of this season. I think the Cavaliers have to understand who they are and who they're not, maybe change some personnel. There's lots of things I'd like to see them do differently, but I think one of the problems that they have right now, offensively and defensively, is that they are completely out of touch with who they should be versus who they want to be.
It's interesting with the defense, as I look kind of at the stats and everything. I mean, I always kind of associate Virginia with having pretty good personnel defensively. Do you feel like that's still the case, or are there personnel issues that are kind of holding this unit back?
Well, they were really hurt by the fact that Eli Harrell and Max Vallis both went pro last
year.
They were the ones responsible for kind of creating the most of the chaos, and I think a lot of people, probably myself included, didn't understand or appreciate just what an impact not just those guys have, but then in concert with Henry Coley at linebacker and Anthony Harris at safety, in terms of getting guys in the right spot. Those two dudes knew Johnson Unitas' defense in and out. And so they were able to put guys, including Harrell and Vallis, in the right spots. And that's why those guys were such terrors last year. I think if they lost one of them and had the other one come back, they'd have been okay. Losing both of them the way they did leaves Virginia without a true pass-rushing guy. And they tried to address that with some personnel moves. I think they've kind of gone the wrong way. They've tried to move Mike Moore, who at times last year played defensive tackle. They're trying to move him out to strong side linebacker because they're just trying to do anything they can to get after the quarterback. And so far, it just hasn't worked. In spots, they can create some pressure. They've been pretty decent on third down. But I think, above all, they just don't have the pass rushing threat at defensive end to really kind of make this thing go. And so really what you're doing is you're just sending linebackers at blitzes and the offensive line's picking it up. And you're not getting the turnovers that you need. You're not getting pressure. And so really, like I said, the middle of the field is pretty wide open, and Boise State really kind of exploited that. I mean, there were times where Boise State was just – it was multiple guys were going to be open. The question is just going to be which one did the quarterback choose to throw to. And then also, too, on the ground, I mean, look, Johnson Unitas' defense is built around not just creating chaos in the backfield, but you got to shut down the run, and they have not done that. They've been getting gashed this year, whether it's C.J. Procise from Notre Dame, whether it's Paul Perkins from UCLA, a kid named Mikhail Abdul-Sabor from William & Mary, ripped him up a little bit. I just think that Virginia has to understand that maybe it's better to have some inexperienced guys who play fast versus having some older guys who maybe more experienced but maybe not necessarily as athletic. I think that's been an issue for them so far this season. From a personnel standpoint, I think they have talent. They just haven't necessarily been utilizing it correctly.
Brad Franklin from CavsCorner.com joining us here to preview Pitt's game against Virginia at Heinz Field. You talked a little bit about Matt Johns and kind of how that offense is developing. They have a top 50 passing offense. Do you feel like there is something they can build on there? That if you kind of said, whatever they worked on during the off week, if they kind of recommitted to it or not, but if they do sort of commit to kind of building it around Johns, do you feel like they've got the players to potentially have kind of a good offense, I guess, because I kind of associate Virginia the last couple of years with having a good defense, not a very good offense. Could it flip this year, I guess, and actually have a pretty potent offense?
Yeah, I would say so. Actually, I would say that the script has kind of already been flipped. I mean, this is a Virginia offense that I can see scoring 25, 30 points a game, which, me, last couple of years, I mean, touchdown or two was about all you were going to get. I really think that Johns has has a little bit of a Philly tough mentality to him. I mean, he just is a kid who believes in himself. He is the far and away leader of this team. At Virginia, there's always drama at quarterback with Grayson Lambert leaving in the spring after being the starter last year and going to Georgia. A lot of fans have kind of clung to that. It's just another sign of the staff making mistakes. But I look at it from the standpoint of, look, this team responds to Matt Johns in a way it just frankly never did to Grayson Lambert. Kanan Severin is his best friend and roommate. He's still, I believe, at one of the premier ACC wide receivers. And they get Thorpe back healthy. They got Taquan Mizell, who's one of the best, all-purpose backs in the nation at this point. If you look at his numbers in terms of how many 100-yard passing games he has had, receiving games he's had out of the running back spot. And then they got a kid from St. Joseph's, Olamide Zaccheaus, who they didn't really expect to play, I don't think. But then once Thorpe went down, they needed somebody to kind of have that quick twitch ability, kind of at the slot. And so the Zaccheaus has really come on as their kind of kick returner, but he's also a threat in the passing game. And I kind of feel like if Virginia went out, kind of did away with its fullback look, get rid of trying to play smash mouth and actually kind of, we're gonna make you choose your poison. We're going to put multiple backs in the backfield. We're going to make you cover them. We're going to put Mizell and get a matchup on a linebacker that we like. And we're either going to make you choose either you got to cover him with a defensive back or you're going to leave one of our other wide receivers open. I really like Virginia's talent. I really like their scheme in a lot of ways. I just think that too often they rely back on this power running thing, and I think in a lot of ways they need to let the pass set up the run. And I think that's what happened against Notre Dame. If you go back and watch that film, that's what Virginia did. Jet sweep action, misdirection, get the defense looking one way, hit them the other way, and then the middle of the field kind of opened up for the run game. I think that's the talent they have, and I actually kind of like their offense if that's the way they decide to kind of make to push the game plan forward.
So, million-dollar question then, Brad, and this is probably one – I know I asked you this over the summer when I had you on to kind of preview the season. I'm sure every radio and podcast interview you do, you get asked this. I mean, what's the feeling now with Mike London? What's the is it still a hot seat? Has it gotten hotter with this 1-3 start? Has he gotten a pass because of the tough games, or what's sort of the status there?
Well, I think that when you have the kind of issues that they have had, you can't get a pass. I think if you'd asked me after the Notre Dame game, I would have told you, yeah, I think maybe he's got a shot. After the William & Mary game, I would say, I'm not really sure. And then after the Boise State game, I'd say, man, it's going to be really, really hard. And that's the thing about this job is going to be, it's not going to come down to the number of wins and losses. I mean, they could legitimately go, you know, be 5-6 going into the Tech game with a chance to make a bowl, and I could totally see Virginia somehow keeping it, depending on how those five work. It's going to be about the how with this team and this program. And the problem is that you're seeing week to week are penalties are an issue. Just overall game mismanagement is an issue, whether it's, you know, too many guys on the field, not enough guys on the field, getting duped for an onside kick, having a punt blocked, that kind of thing. There's just too many of those things that kind of keep happening. And so the powers that be, I think they've given Mike as much opportunity as they can. At this point, it's going to be, one, can they win some games? But then two, the games that they lose, how bad? What do they look like? I think that's the thing, is it's going to be about the feeling. You know, when you watch Virginia, do you think that it's a program that has its act together? And right now, you can't say that it is. That Boise State game is going to be really difficult, I think, for the program to kind of get over. It's going to take a lot of wins, I think, and then even some close losses where the opposition doesn't just win the game, but makes plays to beat you as opposed to you beating yourself. That's historically been, the last few years at least, what Virginia's done, and I think that's the thing that has to go away in order for this staff to stay in place going into next season.
Last one then here for Brad Franklin from CavsCorner.com. Brad, you look around the Coastal Division. I mean, it's still early. I mean, I think, trying to think. Georgia Tech has two games, right, that they played in the conference. Mm-hmm. Carolina's played two games in the conference. Are you sold on North Carolina? Are you sold on Georgia Tech being as down as they look to be? What do you kind of make of this division at this point?
Well, if there's anything you know about the Coastal, it's that anything that can happen will happen. And so I don't like to think about what I actually think about the Coastal until I get to November. Having said that, I don't understand why Georgia Tech's having the issues it's having. I don't like Duke in a lot of ways. I don't really even understand how they've won the games they've won. The other problem, too, is that a lot of these teams haven't played anybody outside the conference, and so it's really hard to know whether some of these games are just blips or, you know, they're going to, you know, get their stuff straight and it's going to be legit. The team actually I like the most right now, ironically, I think, is Pitt. I know that they lost James Conner, and that's obviously a huge deal, but, you know, I thought Allison looked really good. I thought that the kind of change of pace between Peterman and Wojcik, I think, is an interesting angle because it's going to put teams in a bind. But in terms of talent, I mean, listen, I'm a big LeBron James guy. You know, look, you have more Tyler Boyd that does, you know, than any other team. You have, you know, more playmakers in the passing game than a team's going to have. And so I just kind of feel like the way that defense is played, you know, we got to see it week to week, obviously. But if I had to pick one team out of the Coastal that I thought could consistently win some games, it would be them. And the reason being, I think defense travels. Maybe that's the fact that I've been watching too much Virginia basketball. But to me, defense is a thing that you can count on week to week to week. Maybe your offense, you know, guys aren't playing as well, or, you know, there's a little scheme change here or there. But by and large, your defense, if it's pretty good, it's going to stay that way. And I think Pitt right now has what I think is the best defense in the Coastal. And, you know, they've already beaten Virginia Tech, which probably is the other team that I would have looked to. They've had some injuries. I just think that across the division, there's just not a lot of consistency out there. And I think Pitt's defense could be the one thing that is consistently pretty good that carries them all the way to the ACC championship game.
Well, it's funny you said about, you know, we're talking about Virginia with the Boise State game. You talk about recency bias, and that's certainly – I keep thinking about that with Pitt's defense as well, because they're coming off this game against Virginia Tech where they gave up 100 yards of total offense. And I'm like, well – let's see what happens, you know, a month from now after four more games. It's going to be interesting to watch the division because I don't know if I believe in North Carolina yet. You know, I think Carolina and Miami are both so flaky that, you know, who knows what they're really going to do. And Duke was supposed to be able to score, right? Duke, Pitt, and Georgia Tech were supposed to have really good offenses. they have all been a mess. So who knows? But, well, Brad, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. I'm glad you could come and join us. And, you know, we'll talk to you on Saturday, see how this game goes.
Appreciate it, Chris. Have a good one, man.
All right, thanks. That's Brad Franklin from CavsCorner.com, covers Virginia for the Rivals.com network. And, yeah, who knows what this division is at this point. North Carolina got the best record so far, but I don't know if I believe they're the best team. I think Brad could be right. It could be Pitt. Pitt could end up winning this division. I would not be shocked at all if Pitt ended up winning this division. I would also not be shocked if Pitt ends up going 4-4 again in this division. That would not shock me in the least, because it's just you just don't know. You don't know after four games, after 1 month of football. It's just where they haven't really played each other yet. You know, a month from now, we'll have an idea of who's good in this division. We'll have an idea of who's good in this conference. And right now, nobody looks. I mean, Florida State and Clemson look good. And other than that, nobody really looks good in this conference. So it's definitely there for Pitt. We've talked a lot about that over the last 2 weeks, that the division is there for Pitt, the Coastal. Pitt's got an opportunity, and it'll be up to them to seize it. The key is you don't lose games like this. Even though Virginia's got some talented players, and I think they might be better than their record would indicate, I think they're better than they showed against Boise State, you don't lose this game. You don't lose here. You don't lose at Syracuse. Those two games you've got to win. You get those two, well, that's three wins in the ACC. And you've got a real chance with Georgia Tech, Duke, Carolina, Miami, Louisville. You can compete with those teams. You've shown, I think, so far that you should be able to compete with those teams. If you can compete, you can win. All right, that is all the time we have for today. Appreciate you listening. Of course, as always, thanks to Brad Franklin from CavsCorner.com for joining us. Thanks to Josh Taylor for producing this show. It's Monday morning, 9 a.m. We'll be back with the Panther Lair post-game review. What happens on Saturday at Heinz Field when Pitt takes on Virginia? And then, of course, every Thursday afternoon, 2 p.m. here on Triple I Radio with the Panther Lair Show. Stay tuned to the website, panther-lair.com, for all the latest Pitt coverage, football, basketball, and recruiting. Follow me on Twitter, at Panther Lair, P-A-N-T-H-E-R-L-A-I-R. We'll see you on Monday morning, 9 a.m., bright and early for the post-game. This is Chris Peek, the Panther Lair Show, Triple I Radio.